Please. I think today is April 22nd. We're here to review the Department of Public Safety FY 2014 recommended budget to County Council. Currently present are council persons Sheldon, Tackett, Bell, Weiner, Diller. I'm Councilman Smiley, co-chair of Finance. Tara Finnegan will be taking the minutes. A little bit of housekeeping. Council President Bullock, Councilwoman Kilpatrick, and Councilman Penrose Hollins will not be joining us. I just left them. They're down at the county courthouse, Court of Chancery, listening to the Save Our County hearing that's taking place. I can tell you I was there for 3 hours and 10 minutes. And I am pleased to say that most of the money that was wasted this morning was private taxpayer money and not out of the budget for Newcastle County anyway. Because based on what I heard, it was wasted. Councilman Retta is out. He'll be back later today. And Councilwoman Diller has a situation. She will be leaving us a little early. With that, anybody want to present?
Good afternoon.
Just as a reminder, anyone that speaks, please identify yourself for the record.
My name is Joseph Bryant, Jr., and I presently serve as the Public Safety Director for Newcastle County Government. Good afternoon.
Is that presently with a big question mark or a little one?
It's a big one. I think my task initially is to do a summary, and then I will present those who will be providing information about the various divisions, and then I'll just sit back and relax.
Works for us.
And if you do have a packet, the first page, it's our organizational chart, which indicates 621 positions in the Department of Public Safety, 117 in emergency medical, 403 in police, 86 in emergency communication, and 6 in the Office of Emergency Management. It also lists our functions, an overview of our functions. On page 2, it's a history of our budget for the past 8 years. And in this budget, FY 2014, it reflects a 4.78 increase over 2013.
One place on the record, the Councilman Cartier is in the room.
Page 3. It's a 2014 recommended budget allotment among the 4 divisions.
You said page 14?
Page three.
I'm sorry. Hearing is like not good.
Page 4. It's a historical picture of the positions with the Department of Public Safety over the past 8 years. Moving on to page 5, it's our
Councilman Smiley.
Councilman Cartier.
If we could go back to page 4.
Yes.
Looking at the personnel, I guess this reflects from 12 to now where we are now, new hires with police,
yes.
New hires with paramedics.
Yes. It's actually, it's not, it's the positions, not...
Oh, positions.
It's the positions.
Okay.
Okay. On page 5, it's our picture of our diversity. Let me spend a little bit of time with that if I could, if I might. It's going to be talked about a little bit more, but I want to talk specifically about our paramedic division and our diversity, our efforts to more diversify that division. I've had a talk with the leadership of our paramedic division, and here are some of the ideas that we're going to put forward, if not already in place. And that is, we're going to establish a committee within the paramedic division to focus specifically on recruitment. We're going to work closely with organizations like the National Organization of Black Law Enforcement Executives, the National Latino Peace Officers Association, and the International Association of Chiefs of Police, along with the Mid-Atlantic Association of Women in Law Enforcement, in an attempt to identify a more diverse group of candidates for our position as paramedics. We're going to attend, we're going to have recruiters from our paramedic division attend regional and national conferences for the purpose of recruiting candidates. We're going to update, and we're in the process already of updating our recruitment package that would more, that better reflect the makeup of our county. We're going to use a young, diverse group of paramedics to do our recruitment for us. We're in the process now of establishing a working relationship with Delaware State University in an attempt, again, to identify some candidates for paramedic positions. We will participate in job fairs up and down the entire East Coast, focusing in on historically black colleges and universities. As a matter of fact, there is one tomorrow at Delaware State University, and we will be in attendance. We will appear on both local and regional TV talk shows, specifically on Channel 28, again, for the purpose of recruitment. And we will tag along whenever we can with other recruiters within the Department of Public Safety, such as the police, again, for recruitment purposes. So we have a plan moving forward. That's just some of 11 thoughts that we have. Again, we're going to put that committee together, and we're going to aggressively go out and try to find and diversify our division. Not just this division, but all of our divisions, all four divisions.
Councilman Warner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Director Bryant, that is a comprehensive, holistic approach, which takes into consideration that for a more diversified force, candidates need to see diversified cultural backgrounds. Yes. From the people that are setting the example. And I applaud you and your department for that broader approach.
And believe me, it comes out of Larry and his entire leadership team, our sergeants and our lieutenants. We meet on a regular basis, and they too see the need for more. And again, we're going to put together a committee, and we're going to aggressively go after it.
Councilman Cartier.
I just want to also applaud your efforts to recruit diverse candidates for our public safety department. I think there is a kind of consensus in the government and council that the workforce should reflect the people we serve.
That's correct.
And so any kind of proactive initiative you can undertake in hiring to take us toward that goal is a good thing.
Justin Bell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director, I guess one question I'd have is that, you know, we don't want to dwell on the past, but at the same time, we have had in the past a large turnover at times of paramedics. And I know that HR had reported to us that they were looking at trying to change the exit interviews to become more involved in exit interviews so that it's not just done on the individual division basis. One of the things that became apparent to this council is that not just diversity, but I think that we had folks that had went all the way through training. We made a significant investment, and then they failed their field training operations and everything. So I guess as part of this new vision, maybe the request would be, from my perspective, would be that could we somehow maybe take a look at a sampling of folks that have left here, and why did they leave here? How can we improve? Because I would venture to say that there has to be some reason that we would have that type of everything. So just as a suggestion, okay, that we could take a look at that also.
That's really not a problem. I think it's a great idea. Again, I think it's important that we have a good cross-section of folks on this committee to look at a number of different items and issues and concerns, and that would be one of them.
Thank you.
Councilman Powers has joined us.
Yes, sir. If I might, on page 6, it's really an overview of our budget, which is on page 7. It basically further describes each one of the object levels in more detail. That's on page 7 and 8. And if you skip over to page 10, it's the revenue source for the public safety department. Yes, sir.
I've got a question for you. Page 9 shows no increase or decrease, but when we've got cadets coming out of the academy, so where does that fall into this formula?
This shows no change here, increase or decrease in that total number of positions, the 621 within the overall public safety. That's why the cadets and that have nothing to not show up on this page, unless we were adding.
So they'll be coming and filling vacancies that are already that are already there in the total
number.
Yes, there
are. Yeah, one of the questions. Yeah. Okay.
All right, again, that's my summary. My next assignment is to identify the individuals who will be presenting today. The first, it will be the Emergency Management Division, and that will be Dave Carpenter, followed by Jeff Miller, who will talk about communications. Larry Tan will be the lead presenter regarding emergency medical services. And last but not least, Colonel Setti will take care of police, crossing guards, and administration.
Oh, yeah, while we have it up here, can I get a motion to approve the minutes of the previous budget hearing?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Councilman Cartier.
Yes, on page 10. Were you looking at just outside revenues to public safety?
Yes.
Side, you know, what we allocate from the general fund. So your false alarm fees. So this is 29% of the amount collected. It's up our percentage of the fees. So we have a vendor that collects those fees, and we get basically 30% of the revenue collected. Is that how, am I reading that correctly?
Yes.
It's a pretty good deal for the vendor.
I'd characterize it more as 29%.
Yes.
Well, right.
But, yeah. Okay. Any other questions?
$12,000.
Brian, moves on. All right.
$36,000.
Quarter of a person.
Good afternoon, Council. Coordinator Dave Carpenter, Jr. from the Office of Emergency Management. I'm here to present the Office of Emergency Management budget. Thank you for your time consideration today. If you focus on page 12, is our overall mission, a couple of highlights of last year's activities. Page 13 shows our history of our budget individually throughout the office, and I want to highlight that this is always, you're looking at the county match portion of our funding. The grant side is not shown in this budget, obviously, but it is shown on the next page, or the next couple pages. Page 14 shows the breakdown of where that spending is. A large portion of that is in the personnel costs, the salary benefits, which is supported by the grant funding. And on page 15, as you can see, The county match portion has a change this year, mostly a decrease in most of the areas other than our intergovernmental costs, with some increases which are highlighted in the next couple pages. But you can see where the grant funding is listed at the bottom for your reference. We get operationally to support the county match grant portion a year for our operations is to about $245,000. And then we utilize the rest of that funding of the total of $320,000 from FEMA pass-through to DEMA to utilize for projects within the office and outside in order to support our activities. Another portion of that grant funding is the nuclear plant funding for the radiological planner. And this is broken out that most of the decreases in the county side is some balances with the federal grant funding and the nuclear plant funding. We did receive a little slight increase in the grant funding from the nuclear plant, but not much, not to equate to what the full services provided there. There's no increase or decrease of positions this year. The position adjustments on page 17. Which takes us to page 18, which are our significant accomplishments over this past year, which some of you will be seeing very shortly. Is the first one, which is the National Flood Insurance Protection Community Rating System, has been completed and approved by FEMA. We will be receiving that award and certification from FEMA here in the very near future. And we're going to be working with Councilman Bell and Council President Bullock's office to develop some draft resolutions for that as FEMA and DANREC are coming to present us with that certification. That program is a lot of documentation that was collected by our office and the Department of Land Use Flood Insurance Program in order to support points towards the credit of those activities. What that does is it presents a information to the insurance services organization, and they develop a class rating for Newcastle County. We achieved a class rating of 8, which equates to a 10% reduction in flood insurance policies for all those carrying flood insurance within the flood hazard areas, and a 5% reduction for those outside the special flood hazard areas. Unfortunately, I just received news also, which I'll be developing some more information specifically, that the flood insurance program is instituting increases at the same time. So obviously, it was a good benefit for us to get in this program at the time so that the residents don't see that much of an increase over the next couple of years.
Who takes care of it? Is there a parent agency, insurance underwriters, whatever, that is notified? And do they disseminate this to all
Yes, they will be.
Carriers?
Overall, and I was on a conference call about 2 weeks ago with the National Flood Insurance Program, and the National Flood Insurance Program is administered by the federal government, the Flood Insurance Administrator, who sends out all the information to the individual insurance companies that actually issue the policies out to the homeowners.
Councilman Warner.
Thank you. This is an issue that I know more about than I care to from the National Association of Counties. There used to be the general taxpayer paid 90%, and the person whose property was at risk because they built in the flood plain or the flood fringe was taking 10%. Over a 10-year period of time, there was a shift to the point where it's now the opposite. 90% is now paid, what I think correctly so, by the person at risk, and 10% is borne by the natural taxpayer, because we all benefit a little bit from that. It's a better cost-benefit sharing. The other thing that had happened at that time, and I was part of this national effort, we got both Democrats and Republicans, believe it or not, in Congress to support $1 billion digitalized floodplain mapping so that we could do a more accurate analysis, and that's also helped to better target the risk involved.
In the next year, they're going to increase, basically develop a new zone for flood mapping, which would be a benefit to everybody and to the flood insurance process. But you're right, Councilman. The other impact of this is over that time, what they're now starting to institute is to start removing the further subsidies that have been from the federal government to the private homeowners. Over the next 4 years, they'll be seeing that subsidy totally removed from anybody that it is not their primary residence and they're carrying flood insurance. So any of those seasonal recreational homes, the secondary homes, your vacation homes that you may have in those areas will get that subsidy removed totally. The other highlight is we've acquired some additional shelter supplies after Hurricane Irene. This was an effort we were able to realign some federal Homeland Security grant funding to acquire some more additional cots and support equipment for the shelters. given the impact in the population that we saw during Irene, that we again saw during Sandy storm. It helped out immensely during Sandy, having those supplies on hand. We finished the hiring of the last vacancy for the planner. We're now fully staffed as far as the two planners and the support staff go. In addition, we assisted up in Councilman Cartier's district with a acquisition and buyout project up there. Successful FEMA buyout application was awarded just recently, and the process for that should be starting in Ardentown up at 23 Marsh Road project.
So it's going to go for a buyout?
Yep.
Excellent.
Yes.
That's in Council Weiner's district, so that's good news for you.
Yes, it is. It's good. We were sort of left on the sideline. Councilman Cartier and I both know that.
Representative Carney got it.
That's great.
The just another highlights of the Emergency Center Operations Activation. Actually, we had the one of the larger ones this October. Came in on, we actually activated partially on Saturday, fielding some phone calls. Activated fully on Sunday evening through and including Tuesday evening for that storm. Supported that storm and had all the agency representatives in. We are just now completing the reimbursement process for that storm for costs incurred by Newcastle County. We should see 75% of those costs reimbursed. I do not have an exact total at this point because there's still some finalization of paperwork being submitted, but it should be around the ballpark of $250,000 in costs that we should be reimbursed, some maybe just a little less based upon the 75%. But that's about what we got back from Sandy also. One of the highlights last year in the exercises is the State Radiological Emergency Preparedness Program. We did complete the biennial dress rehearsal drill with no issues in the federally graded exercise that FEMA comes in and evaluates along with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. And then obviously our premier event every year as far as outreach goes is the Blue Rocks Preparedness Night. That's coming up again this year, May 31st. The combination of the county, the city, and the state partnering to get outreach information out to the public at that large arena. In addition to last year, we partnered with state, county, state and city and private entities in order to put on a large outreach effort towards state-licensed nursing home facilities and assisted living centers to bolster their emergency plans and outreach. On page 19, several of our goals remain pretty much the same from last year. We are focusing, and most of the focus this year will be concentrated on the Newcastle County Comprehensive Emergency Management Plan, continually to align this with the National Incident Management System and Incident Command organizational structure, and get this plan revised since the last time it really was had a full revision was back in late 2006. On page 20, the challenges we face in this year's budget, we'll be implementing our Continuity Operations Plan. This plan maintains essential services when a facility is unusable, whether it be the government center, the city county building. It records and documents all the information that we have about vendors, our facilities, personnel, and what we need to do is in order to maintain those essential services. And obviously, we have alternate sites that we have identified in order to relocate personnel and operate for a longer period of time if a site became unusable. This plan has been a challenging project over the past 4.5 years that we've been working on it. It is coming to very close fruition, and as we have some training being held this Friday, we should be able to concretely move forward in the implementation phase. Then we're also looking at evaluating the potential for us to get accredited in our program. This will be a large undertaking in the next fiscal year, probably started sometime during the end of this calendar year and go into the end of the next fiscal year and into the beginning of the FY15. Page 21 highlights the current vacancy we do have. An executive assistant position was assigned to us some time ago when we had planner vacancies to assist us. Primarily, this person handled the outreach and community training. They did assist somewhat with employee preparedness training and facility evacuation plan revisions. This position was assigned to us, again, like I said, just to help out during the planner vacancies. It is the administration's decision as to what they intend to handle this position since it's being vacant.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think from a public information educational standpoint, it would certainly behoove the administration to take a serious look at this position. I think that you proved during the lack of having the other person on board the importance of this position But I think the importance of this position doesn't go away just because we fill the planner positions. This particular position handles, as you said, a lot of the public outreach programs, meetings, and things that are necessary. So, from the public safety standpoint, I would strongly recommend the administration take a look at keeping that position and filling it.
And you are proposing to keep this position funded in FY14?
Yes. The next page is page 22, highlights our breakdown of some of our costs in 23 of our recommended budget. Sure. If there are any questions this time, I can field those.
Thank you.
Question. Thank you. I'd like to talk to you about a subject which came up recently about an hour ago in discussion with the Deputy CAO concerning the county's backup for loss of power. And you know, I realize that we can withstand a certain amount because we have generators. I'd like to find out a little bit more about that, and also what would happen if the generators were knocked out. Yeah, what are the contingency plans?
That's what I was referring to as a long-term project of continuity of operations, of getting some of that concrete information from each of the departments as to what their specific needs are, so that we can determine what type of facility they could be relocated to. But that's what the continuity of operations plan formulates, is we do have generators in most of our major facilities, and a majority of our county facilities have generator power. Some of our facilities, our critical facilities, actually have dual feed power from the power company. So if one leg gets knocked out, we can actually switch over to another feed from another leg. And then we also have generator capacity at most of our facilities. Without going into too much detail about our contingencies and our redundancies in the nature of sensitive information, there are most of our major facilities, like I said, all have generator power. If we were to lose the generator on top of damage to that facility becomes unusable, that's where a continuity of operations plan kicks in. As I said before, we have alternate sites that also have portable backup power that we can get up and running and relocate personnel to those sites in order to operate out of those sites.
I don't know the proper protocol, but perhaps, Mr. Chairman, we could ask our county attorney if it would be appropriate for us to go into executive session at some point so that we might learn about a little bit of that in confidence. Yeah. Obviously, we have security issues.
Well, I think it would be appropriate, but I'm not in the budget meeting.
At another time, of course.
Yeah, move it to another
public safety.
Yeah,
meeting.
Public safety, yeah.
Yes,
sure.
Thank you.
Thanks, Councilman.
Yeah. Anything further for emergency management? Councilman Fowler.
Yes. I didn't know I'm present.
Yeah, I said so.
I didn't either.
No, I paused before you sat down. So we're on the record. And now you have a question on the record, wanting to know if you're here.
Yeah, I really am.
Yeah, I just wanted to report that Bill Powers is here.
Oh.
But
is there a motion on that?
On a serious note, I think that as we review each one of the divisions in the various departments, their budgets, it's important for us to reflect to the division manager. And even though emergency management is a small division, people-wise, it's a very significant and important division of public safety. And we often don't hear a lot about emergency management, emergency planning, and preparedness, response, and recovery until we have a situation that necessitates them to go in action. And I think that we've all had experience with the Emergency Management Division. You folks do a great job.
And I'll just say from this point forward, I think it's in the best interest of all involved in county government if I don't voice my appreciation. I think it will have adverse impact. Just take my past comments as being repeated.
Thank you.
Anything further?
Thank you
very much.
I'll turn it over to
Assistant
Chief Miller from communications.
I thought that was part of your job to continue to let him pass off. I'm just kidding.
I'm going to sit. Again, my name is Joe Bryan. I'm the Public Safety Director for Newcastle County Government, and we're going to review the Newcastle County Emergency Communications Division proposed budget for FY 2014, and I will bring up Acting Chief Jeffrey L. Miller. Maybe it's not L. Come on up.
Good job.
Good afternoon, Council. Jeffrey P. Miller.
Well, we'll call you up as soon as the L is done.
As soon as the L is done, I'll get started. It's a pleasure to sit before you again in such a short amount of time. But our presentation begins on page 24, and I just have to comment there that a black and white photo certainly does not do justice to the great working facility that your 911 center represents. Page 25 is a coincidence that we used the photo from our 2012 telecommunicator team award from the APCO Mideast chapter. I'd like to highlight that the girl, Jamie Wright, that is holding the plaque there, just won last week this year's award as the telecommunicator from Delaware as well for APCO. So kudos for her as well. Now we'll get into the budget presentation. Page 26. Over the past 8 years, but we'll be showing for 2014 a recommended 13% increase at a total expenditure of $2.6 million. Page 27, a breakdown of that. You'll see that 90% of our 8.6 is addressed in personnel costs. The next largest section is the internal governmental cross charges, and then it just breaks down. Moving on to page 28, budget detail. Again, the salaries highlighted there, 9.2% difference, a 20% increase in employee benefits, but again, the overall total of $8.6 million. Move to page 29, the recommended budget. The breakdown here is specific to the salary and wages, again, showing the 9.27, again, the employee benefits with increase at 20%. And please keep in mind that in 2013, we brought on 13 new call operators in an effort to move forward in transitioning, restructuring the way we process a 911 phone call. So we are well on our way to completing that venture. And we are beginning training just this week in the educational process of the EPD protocol that we'll be using. But the budget from that point forward pretty much stays flat through training and civic communication utilities all the way down to the cross charges throughout government with a 27% increase there. Mostly that you see there is IS cross charges at $38,000 and an additional for GIS mapping, the way we're plotting the caller's individual location and keeping the maps up to date. That's quite an expense associated with that. Moving to page 30, positions, there are no positions adjustments for this fiscal year. Our 8 call operators from last year, we've filled all those positions with the exception of 2, but we don't see any increases or decreases for 14. Moving forward to page 31, our significant accomplishments. I would like to highlight that we still continue to be an accredited center of excellence in the use of our emergency medical dispatch system. We were the 74th agency in the world to receive that achievement, and we have maintained that achievement for the last 15 years. This most recent achievement, we were quite high at a 98.8% compliance rate to the overall use of the protocol, which was 1.5% above average of the best of the best. So that's kudos to our personnel. We also in 2013 implemented an email system that allows for the quick and efficient delivery of incidents not only to the fire service but to the police department, emergency management, and EMS. They will get to see those as well in 2014, but instead of sending information about incidents to printouts at firehouses or to a printer at a firehouse, we can actually deliver those through an email system and they can receive those on their smart devices as well. And we highlighted there the 8 call operators that we received last year, and we are continuing to move forward with our career development throughout 2014. Page 32, our goals and challenges, the communication division goals. We still are trying to achieve answering all 911 phone calls within 90% of the time. That's in 10 seconds or less from the time the caller gets into our system. And one of the last charts I have to show you before I'm done here will show you where we are today. We're currently at about 83%, and we anticipate deploying all 8 of the new call operators fully functional by June, and we expect to see that number increase significantly. Technology improvements. One thing I'm pleased to discuss with you today is that the state of Delaware, the E911 board, has opted to fund a complete statewide CAD system. So that will save us money along the way in the next 5 years in maintenance. But we will become a 47% stakeholder in use of CAD system throughout the state of Delaware when you're looking at all the police departments and all the fire medical responses throughout the state of Delaware. So that's a significant savings on our part as well. Emergency Communication Division challenges is to maintain our accreditation levels in EMD. And we also look forward to becoming accredited in EFD, which is the fire protocol, and EPD, which is our police protocol, as we begin to implement those over the next 12 months. Moving to page 33, Emergency Communications Division current staffing levels. I have some corrections there for you today, but we currently have the one vacancy of where I'm the acting chief right now. In telecommunicator for police, instead of one, it is now two. And as of next Wednesday, we will have 4 open vacancies in our public safety operator one, which is a call operator who answers 911. We just went through some interviews this past Friday, and we have some candidates going through the background process with me. Contractual services is the next page, at page 34, and that totals up to a little over $500,000 at 654. Most of all of this is, whether it's an administrative, fire board, recom, or call operators, it's for the maintenance and communication and repair of the equipment that we use today. No questions there. Page 35, just the recommended and consistent, broken down by object level.
Any questions from any members of council?
I'll highlight real quick for you before we leave is page 36. Our emergency call operators answered 467,210 emergency 911 calls. That's a 40,000 increase from last year. Next, page 37 is the police dispatch. Handled the dispatch of all the police agencies with the exception of Delaware State Police and Newport. All other police agencies was 297,000 with a 27,000 increase over last year. And fire and EMS dispatched 128,000 incidents between Newcastle County Volunteer Fire Service and the City of Wilmington. 128,000, bringing us to 14,000 over last year. And then the chart I had highlighted, or wanted to make sure that we highlighted, was our ability to answer 911 phone calls within 10 seconds or less. 2011, you'll see, is at 78%. That's directly related to the number of call operators we had had on board then. We've since then not only been up to full staff, but we've increased by 8. We're up at about 83%. And once those 8 are fully cut loose, anticipated this June or July, we thoroughly expect to meet that 90%. Okay.
Councilman Carter.
You know, when I look at these bar graphs, I mean, it is amazing the amount of growth in calls to the center.
Now, what do you attribute that to? I mean, the population really hasn't grown that much.
The very first chart being call operator, being phone calls themselves, yeah. I attribute that to 911, or I'm sorry, cell phones, voice over IP, people's ability to get to 911 more readily. So that could be your car fire on Interstate 95 that generates 40 phone calls. every one of those still has to be answered, processed, and made sure it's not a different emergency.
And when you bring that point up, it just drives home, you know, at some point, we're going to have to get some recognition by our partners in state government about the need for a fee from cellular devices, because that's a dramatic jump. And does it seem to, there's no end in sight, right? It's just
more calls. Well, if you recall, just a few weeks ago, I was here to give you a brief overview of next-gen 911, and that's just, you know, going to make matters more interesting.
Good choice of words.
Maybe at some point we should get on the agenda of the Public Safety Committee in the House. I don't know if the Senate has such a committee, and present these facts.
I know on behalf of the E911 board, which I sit on as the assistant chief of operations of the center, we're presenting an increase potentially in the cell phone tax. But we have never gone after prepaid cell phones. We're looking to get the House bill changed for that, so that we'll go after prepaid as well, which we'll see some, not significant, but we'll see some increase back to the counties.
Well, I saw, I paid my cell phone recently, and I saw there is a fee there.
Yes.
But we don't get the fee.
We get the fee, we get some of that fee, but it's based on our residential and commercial landlines. It has nothing to do with the actual cell phone fee itself.
That's what I'm saying.
Right.
There is no electronic or cell phone wireless fee originating on those.
Correct. As those numbers continue to increase, we're not getting any.
Prepaid you're after.
Now we're going after prepaid. We've never been getting that, which now is 25% of the market in the state of Delaware.
So we're not getting them from any of the wireless devices?
None of the prepaids, no.
Just prepaid.
We're not getting any from prepaid at all.
We get it on the wireless, but it's based on the ground line.
Right.
Right.
That's the problem. That's where our shortfall comes.
What is that? Yeah. Based on the ground
line? Like your bill.
The hardware.
No. I'm just speaking of.
Page 10 does highlight what our return is, which is like $1,020,000.
Councilman Powers, you have a question?
Yeah, I got a question. Huh? So, back, just jump back. With the cell, on my bill, it does say 911.
Correct.
Now, where does that money go?
The 50 cents goes eventually to the E911 board, which is then distributed based on the number of residential and commercial landlines that Newcastle County had in 2002 when they had done a study. Now, based on the fact that we know that those lines are dropping, people are cutting their copper and they're going to voice over IP and they're not paying the same fee, and we haven't been increased any money towards the cellular, but the cellular has boomed, the fund, although it needs to stay self-sustaining, they take the cell phone money to pay us for the landlines that no longer exist. So we're still getting the same $1,095,000 that we've been getting since, I believe, 2002, with no increase. Now, we will see a slight increase based on the prepays, but we're not going to see anything major until we take that, increase it to a dollar, and move forward on getting all the getting the cellular money redistributed.
So it's 50 cents per phone?
I think your bill might say 60 cents, and then 50 cents goes back to the E911.
Now, where does the other 10 cents go? Are them administering it?
Administrative fee for state and
I mean, there is a problem here. I mean, I have a landline, plus I'm paying for a bunch of funds.
Excuse me. So
I expect that money to go in my account, not in Kent and Sussex County. So you're losing money even off of me.
Bob.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm trying to figure it out.
I understand. I don't mind paying if it's going to take care of my area, but you're not telling me it's coming here. So what are we? Why are we going to go act for more for that? The percent. Where does the rest of it go? If it goes to E911, where are they providing it?
Well, they distributed the rest of it towards the maintenance, some of the maintenance and the infrastructure of the 911 phone system. So.
I think I really liked it because, I mean, I'm watching a lot of things disproportionate between the three counties. And this just sounds like another one.
Yeah, Councilman Powell, Bill Streets, worked with Jeff. The problem is the way the legislation was drafted for the cellular users. The cellular users bill the state of Delaware for reoccurring costs every month. So if they update the infrastructure, that cost is paid by this fee to maintain the system. So when you went to a 4G system, that 50 cents you paid went right back to your carrier, whether it be AT&T or Verizon, to help them build the infrastructure to keep your system live. It's 50 cents, but...
It isn't even live in half of my district. You don't even need to go that way.
I'm just trying to explain to you where the money goes. We get the hardwired money. We get that from what the account was back in 2002.
Yeah.
They see the drop-off now. The residential lines are dropped off. Well, we were guaranteed $1,095,000. So when they dropped off the hardwired system, they take the money out of the cell phone use to give us our money.
What I'm saying is I'd like to see how much money the total amount is that's collected out of Newcastle County.
I can get those figures.
I want that, and I also want the number on the hard line.
I can get those figures for you.
And see how much you're really getting back. And who is the system, when half of my district doesn't even work, you know that. We've had things that cut right out. The police have had it.
Well, I can tell you,
what are we paying
more
for?
Than the $1,095,000.
If they need, then they need to really update, see how much money's really there.
I agree.
Okay. Anything else more or further?
Hey, it doesn't work. Why are we going to help them get more?
Move right along.
Well, we get more. They're only giving them what there was back in that year.
50 cents. He
Chairman,
next
up. The Chief Larry Tan, Emergency Medical Services Division.
Thank you.
It's the same amount.
Good afternoon, members of council. Larry Tan, Chief of Emergency Medical Services. Our presentation starts on page 40. And looking on page 41, I think most every member of council is familiar with the mission of the Newcastle County Paramedic Service. Some of you have used the service and or know people who have used the service, so I won't belabor that. In looking on page 42 of the recommended budget, our recommended budget is a 7.19% increase over the previous fiscal year, which is primarily a result of the funding of the last four unfunded positions within the EMS division. In looking at page 43, as with most service entities, a vast majority, almost 88% of our costs are salary and benefits. I mean, we are, as a service entity, our personnel obviously are the ones who are providing care, and that is going to be the majority of the cost involved with delivery of service. I am pleased to say that our entire operating budget is authorized for 30% state reimbursement, so as we expend funds for delivery of the service on a quarterly basis, the state provides a 30% reimbursement. So looking on page 44, under the object level one, again, the major changes of the previous fiscal year are going to be salary and benefits. Communication and utilities, which will be explained on the next page, is primarily the addition of two EMS facilities that are under lease. One is in Newcastle, station number two, which, as council is aware, we moved out of the Connor building into a lease facility, which now makes us responsible for those utilities. And we also budgeted for the potential of a new facility in the southern Newcastle County area. The same with contractual services. A majority of the contractual services change is the lease payments for EMS station number two.
Mr. Chairman. Councilman Bell.
It's okay. Just a question on the contractual type of obligations. When we look at, are we still paying a fee for the station in Wilmington?
Yes, the station that's at the M&T Bank building is still under a lease agreement.
Okay, so M&T and then station two,
correct.
Is roughly what does that work out a year as far as contractual?
$400 a month.
Yeah, M&T Bank, $1,200 a month.
Mm-hmm.
And for?
And I want to say about $1,800 a month.
Roughly $1,800 a month for station number two.
And I know that we've had some discussion with the administration a little bit about this, but this is something that I believe is out of Chief Tan's realm of calling, but You know, we're paying others to house our medics, and yet at Cranston Heights Fire Company, Brandywine Hunter Fire Company, we have paramedic units stationed in fire stations, and they get zip from us as far as any type of utilities or any type of rental. And I know it's a partnership, and that's a great partnership, but there's a cost associated with it, and you know, I'd like to see the administration continue to take a look at this as far as the spaces that we're taking at fire stations. It should be fair and equitable. If we can go out and get a contractor to provide a building or a bank to provide a building, and we're right away, we're ready to give them $1,800 bucks a month, our volunteer fire service could certainly use some of that funding also.
Councilman Bell, I'll tell you, I attended the ribbon cutting and everything else, and the next budget year, I was surprised when I heard that we were paying, because it wasn't presented that way.
Yeah. We continue to get surprised.
Okay. On page 46, there are no changes in the number of authorized positions within the EMS division for the 2014 budget. And looking on page 47, now in looking at the FY13, some of the things that we've done, again, we've improved the work environment for the paramedics assigned to EMS station number 2. Clearly, the facility is a lot safer, it's a lot nicer work environment. Positive comments from the personnel assigned to that facility. We recognized 8 personnel at the 2012 EMS graduation appointment ceremony, 6 of which.
Hold on a minute. I'm not sure whether it's a lifeline or a suicide note. But.
A little bit. Councilman Bell brought up earlier at a volunteer fire meeting about the stations 11 and 14, and we're in negotiations with them right now to establish a fee for them for the next fiscal year. We're giving them a portionate amount for rent.
That's good news. Just give them free tickets to sleep under the stars.
They'll come to council for a vote.
Yes. Okay.
Moving on, we also have had to be very careful with public education activities, because at this point, with our limited staff, any public education activities that we do typically mean an overtime assignment. So we've had to careful look at those types of activities. Some of the other accomplishments, we did install a backup emergency generator at EMS Station 6, which is in Glasgow, which was funded entirely through the Federal Homeland Security Grant Program. We also renewed our national accreditation. We received a full 3-year accreditation through the Commission on Accreditation of Ambulance Services, and remain one of 155 agencies in the country who have achieved that accreditation, and we're very proud of that. On page 49, our goals continue to be filling of all of our vacant positions. We continue to move forward on that. We want to continue to fulfill the requirements to maintain our national accreditation, to assure that the citizens are getting value for their investment in the paramedic service. We are continuing to look at replacement or enhancement of EMS facilities that aren't properly supporting the paramedic service. In fact, we've had meetings with some members of council to look at the Southern Newcastle County facility and what options are available to improve the working conditions for the personnel assigned down there. And we're continuing to move forward with the replacement of all the monitors and defibrillators and pacemaker devices that our units are carrying out in the field. We have devices now that are no longer covered under warranty with or service contracts with the vendor. And we're at the point where it's time to replace all the devices. So we're drafting up the bid specifications to put out, for purchasing to put out the bid, and with the plan being to replace half the devices on the units in 1 year, replace the second half of the devices in the second year.
Are we moving forward with, excuse me if I missed something, are we moving forward with the partnership with Christiana Hospital for that paramedic station at that site?
We're looking at alternatives at this point. Christiana Care has opened their facility, and a part of the the savings that we would have realized would have been if we were piggybacking on an existing construction project.
So we lost that window.
I think we have. We're looking at alternatives.
That's what I thought, but I was told the other day, just someone thought something else. So I thought we missed the window. Okay.
Some of the challenges and risks on page 52, restoration of EMS division staffing levels remains an ongoing challenge. Councilman Bell mentioned attrition, and yes, we see attrition every year, typically in the area of 6 to 8 positions. While we are working to try and bring people on board, the net gains in each year are rather small. Combine that with the fact that we are limited in the opportunities to actually train people. At this point, the only training site in Delaware is Delaware Technical and Community College, a program that runs 18 months for an entry-level person needing paramedic training. We're looking at alternatives at this point to include whether we can use training facilities that are out of state. But for us to achieve our staffing needs, really, we need to look at two things. One is actually getting a group of people that we can send through school. The other is the potential to overfill, similar to what the police have done, to be ahead of the curve. Just like a police academy, after 6 months, there's attrition that goes. They're typically not fully staffed at the end of the graduation. We see the same thing, except our training program is twice as long. The other challenge that we see is the fact that there have been increases in violent crimes throughout Newcastle County. And it's actually a national trend. We are seeing a national issue within the EMS committee community of assaults on EMS providers. And one of the things that came up, I think, in earlier public safety committee meetings has been the episodes of violence in Newcastle County. And one of the thoughts on in this preparation is we actually provided a map on page 58 of all of the shootings and stabbings that the county paramedics responded on in County 2012. So these are circumstances that actually place or potentially place the providers at risk. We're not getting into the assaults and other events, but in calendar year 2013, we're seeing anywhere from 3 to 5 shootings or stabbings a week. As of last week, we had responded to 66 incidents countywide. In looking on page 53 at the vacancies, the first 4 vacancies were actually previously unfunded positions. The remaining 7 are positions, again, through that have gone through the rotation. And we continue to work to fill those. I think we've got some people that are in the selection process now. On page 54, contractual services details. Again, the major items, EMS station number 2, the land and lease building lease as we move that facility over. The 2 other items being data processing cross charges and vehicle fleet cross charges would be the biggest changes.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Thanks, sir.
And then Councilman Cordier also has a question. I apologize, Councilman.
Just a question on the staffing portion of it. I know that last year's budget hearing and subsequent public safety committee meetings, we talked a little bit about the various positions that was affecting you to be able to do your quality assurance and training and things of that nature. Have those gaps been filled, or are they within these promotions or these positions here?
They're within those promotions. They're within those positions.
Mm-hmm.
We are working right now at addressing, we think, one of the biggest shortfalls that we have, and that's field supervision.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the dilemma that you have as you expand an organization is, and as you transition the workforce, is the workforce gets younger and younger. And the types of activities that the paramedics do in the field, if you think about it, they're doing a lot of the same procedures that would normally be done in a hospital emergency room, a controlled environment, except they're doing it in an uncontrolled environment with really 2 ALS providers and 2 BLS providers. So the ability with a much younger group to have field supervision that can provide counsel, advice, and oversight and guidance to the younger workforce is critical in making sure that you maintain a quality level of care. The other piece of it, as you alluded to, is the ability to monitor clinical performance, the quality improvement. Really, we know that standardizing and having a single point of review for high-risk clinical procedures is imperative to us maintaining the quality of care that everyone's come to expect. So one of the reasons we are pushing and requesting funding of our previously unfunded positions is to enable us to fill those gaps.
Well, I guess the dovetail on that is that, you know, we've mentioned it in prior budgets. It's significantly important to have a proper staff and command structure, to have first-level supervision on the street. But it's also as equally important, as you say, for your quality assurance and training. And there's so much involved, as you know. But so once again, we've asked before, and I think we should ask our administration this time to take a very serious look at getting these positions filled. You know, we have one of the best paramedic systems, communication systems in the country, but it can't operate and it can't sustain itself if we don't have these positions filled. And it creates career development, but it also creates having proper staffing to deal with situations when we need to. So we need to get these things filled. I see the promotions that are coming out of the police department, nothing but praise for them for doing what they're doing. And you can hear amongst the folks that are officers within our police department how much it means to the police department to see some mobility, some promotional opportunities, and they see a brighter future. And I think we need to mirror that and do that in these other divisions. So, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Councilman Cardia.
I think it's really important, and I'll try to speak for Councilmember Diller. She's not here, but to find alternative educational certifications for our paramedic program, and you know, not having us totally locked into Dell Tech. And I'm just going to go back to the issue that I feel compelled to go back again and again with public safety. You know, we have thousands of people who are going to be demobilized out of the American military, veterans with experience, discipline, training. We have to find a way to bridge them in and provide opportunities for paramedics, police. We've got opportunities, an opportunity coming. It's ongoing. And, you know, the national leadership of the military has asked us in local government to help find, you know, good futures for these very fine veterans as we transition out of, you know, a kind of war footing and shrink our military forces. And I know we've had that discussion about, you know, battlefield medics and trying to find a way to create a program where they can get trained up to serve in a paramedic role from what they have. But certainly you're starting with a person who has more experience than, you know, the general candidate you're recruiting.
You must have been peeking at my schedule because I've been asked to go to a meeting on Monday at the White House for a forum with the National Security Staff on just that topic, transitioning military personnel into civilian positions, and I've been asked to go as a representative of EMS and potential for moving for providing that bridge. So there is a ongoing discussion at a national level, and as like I said, as early as next Monday.
Good.
In looking at page 55, it provides just an overview of the recommended budget by object level, all the way down to object level 3. And as you move through the remaining pages, some of the information, page 56, an illustration of all of the ALS incidents for calendar year 2012. Page 57, a review of the number of New Castle County paramedic incidents by each of the districts.
Look at the density.
And as I said earlier, page 58, an illustration of shootings and stabbing responses throughout New Castle County involving the New Castle County paramedics.
Can you tell me what the numbers reflect?
I'm sorry?
The numbers. Because that's not the council districts.
Are those Those are paramedic stations.
Paramedic stations?
Yes. The circles with the numbers are actually the paramedic stations.
Stations,
I'm sorry. Yes, sir.
Thank you. Colonel Albert, I just want to clarify, Chief, when you keep seeing the shootings and static, you're also including the city.
That's correct.
That,
county
that large blob there you're seeing correct. On that map is not in Newcastle County.
Yeah, it is.
Well, they read the papers. They don't want us in the city.
For purposes of clarifying the colonel's point, the county paramedics provide service both in the unincorporated as well as all of the incorporated areas, including the city of Newark, city of Wilmington. So, yes, the map does depict all those incidents that include the city of Wilmington as well as incorporated areas like Newark. Sure.
Route 44. Where? I lost it. It's right here.
You done?
Yes.
Is there any further questions?
Yeah.
Any further medical aid needed?
That's glass.
Anyone from the public? Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Remember next year, I had that little footnote. City.
Exactly.
Chairman, rise to bring up Colonel Elmer Setting, who will give the presentation on the Division of Police.
Thank you, Director. Afternoon, Council. Colonel Elmer Setting, Newcastle County Police. And looks like we're starting on page 61. I'm going to add to page 61 very briefly by explaining what we've done since I came over as the acting chief in late November of last year, which is we've tapped into as much technology as we possibly can put our hands on so that we can predict where crime is occurring. I know you've heard this 60-second commercial in the past, but I'm going to say it one more time because even going into the summer months, we're still seeing a 14% reduction in calls for service across all of Newcastle County. So, you got 350 men and women giving police service to 500,000 people over 400 square miles. And for the first time in a long time, we're reducing the calls for service. And I think it speaks to policing better. And we know how expensive it is. And as a matter of fact, we can get to talk about how expensive it is. But we're doing it the best we can with the bills we got here. That brings us to page 62. Total budget, $57 million. You can see that the lion's share of it is the actual pay and benefits of the officers. And very little of that money is bullets and machine guns. It's mostly personnel. Recommended budget for 2014 crossing guards is $2,910,000, department administration $1,361,000, and police services $52,735,475. 64. Same numbers again. If there's any questions, I'd go for this page for page. Councilman?
Whatever you want.
I think Councilman takes it once
review the pages.
What I want is to get out of this chair.
Where did the fan go?
It's a friendly chair. Okay.
Yeah, we're not
hospital. You can see the salaries and wages eat up a lot of the money. Obviously, there's the employee benefits, followed by the training and civic affairs, which is not a lot there. We are seeing some dramatic increases in the price of bullets. There were some questions asked early on about that. Where that cost is being driven by society stockpiling ammunition. We're not stockpiling. We're using the exact same amount of bullets required by COPT, Council on Police Training.
I actually had a woman complain to me she can't get 22 shorts.
Yeah. you can't get much of anything.
And I got to tell you, it was hard for us because I started to look at her and said, I think she took size 22, but I kept my mouth shut.
Absolutely.
That time I kept my mouth shut.
So we're not doing anything different with the bullets. We're not using any additional ammunition. We're following the footprint that's laid out by Council on Police Training. We do have to qualify for the most obvious reasons. We do that 2 times a year. But we've not changed anything. That cost changes just the amount of the bullets by themselves.
President Powers, you have a question?
Part of it is, and just it's partly stockpiling, but most people can't stockpile it because it's not there. There's a few federal contracts, even Homeland Security. Nobody understands why they're buying so much ammunition, but it's a lot bigger than
they're going to resell it at a high price.
It must be. I don't know. It's hard, but 22 longs, 22 shorts, and nines, you can't find them anywhere. As soon as they come in, they're gone.
It's true.
Yeah. Councilman Carter.
How are we making out with the taser equipment, and do those units have a pretty good life cycle where they have to be replaced frequently? Or
they don't have to be replaced frequently. I know that we're coming up on some to be changed out. I brought my subject matter experts with me, so if I get too far in the weeds, they can bail me out. But the first batch of tasers, I'm pretty sure we're all federal money, all grant money that we applied for. You're going to find that a lot of the things that we have, the training, the equipment, the driving simulator, our firearms training simulator, that's all federal grant money. And the taser is now department-wide, sir, and everybody has one. And I think we are cycling through some of the older ones into newer ones, but they seem to hold up extremely well. Taser keeps improving the product, but having a true non-lethal source has saved us millions of dollars and I don't know how many lives, because as we're going out to these scenes where you have an emotionally disturbed person, and there's more and more of them because they're being released on policies that are beyond my control in the state that are allowing more and more of these folks to, basically not have any oversight. And the families in most of these cases can't control them. And these tasers have stopped us from shootings. I don't know how many people. I can't put a number on it, but I can tell you I've been on scene where a couple of these guys are, they're feeling no pain. They have extreme emotional issues, and they do not recognize any authority. And if they can find a weapon, use a weapon, they'll do it. I don't think we have to mention the fact that we just decorated an officer posthumously this morning to show how dangerous these people can be. And in some cases, they're not emotionally disturbed; they're just on drugs. But let's call it emotionally disturbed. The tasers have saved us millions and millions.
And some of us are just plain mean.
Some. I've never met any.
Okay.
Matt Jamison, some of the tasers are getting to the end of their useful life. They're going out of warranty. We do have a program replacement, just like in the case of the bullet-resistant vest, so that's something we have in place.
Okay. What do we, since we just went through a press conference on the firearms, what do we do with the tasers when they outlive their usefulness?
Let's trade them in.
Is there a trading value to them, or yard sale?
They're destroyed.
They're destroyed, sir. I figured Taser took a certain amount of them back for money.
Yeah.
Were destroyed as same
batteries as or charger. Okay, so they're destroyed as well. Okay. Councilman Bell and Councilman Powers.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, and this will probably be a topic in one of our upcoming Public Safety Committee meetings, but we have had a few requests here recently from citizens that feel that it's not appropriate to outlaw tasers for public use within New Castle County. And we've tried to research and understand where they're coming from, but I guess the bottom line is that these things are best left in law enforcement's hands. And, we don't need, and for anything else, there's always going to be the folks that respect things, but when you legalize them and put them out on the street, then they become a counterweapon against our police officers and against folks and home invasions and everything. So we will put it on as one of the topics in the future to have a thorough review of it.
I know Councilman Powers is next, but I just read, I think it was yesterday, where the lady went and bought a BB gun and then drove her 12-year-old, I think it was, around to shoot windows out of vehicles in her community. So I hate to think that she'd have bought him a taser for his birthday. Mm-hmm. You know, go down the street and visit little Johnny. Councilman Powers.
Just with the tasers, and question for you. I mean, what is the life expectancy? And what is making them wear out?
They go 5 years.
5 years, but is that what's making them 5 years that can't be rebuilt?
It's the manufacturer only warranties, and just like the vests, we found that some of the vests you can actually shoot at them after 6, 7, 8, 9 years, they'll still hold, but they only, you know, the manufacturer only warranty.
They'll only give it so much of a shelf life.
I mean, even a gun is only warranty so long.
Yeah.
I mean, but it goes longer than that.
So, as do the vests, sir. But we'll, again, in order to avoid the lawsuits down the road, once the warranty's up, we have to surrender that equipment. Like, for instance, the officers that went into the city-county building that were former county police officers that requested to keep their vests. Since the vest was past its shelf life, we had them sign off on it that it's their vest. They still work, so you can probably find some use for it, but certainly...
I guess my question is, isn't there anything looked at sending them back and having them remade?
Sir, Captain Wendy Feaser, we do that. They are beyond the 5 years, and what we've done is we've started a maintenance program where twice a year when we go to the range, we do bring every taser in, we look at it, and we do maintenance on it to extend the life of it. When the 5 years is up, taser basically, if something happens to it, and we try to send it back, they won't fix it anymore. They usually send it back to us and say, just destroy it and buy a new one. It just becomes a point where they're...
Part of that could be on their end just to keep the value up on tasers.
They're beyond repair.
Anything can be remanufactured and coming back.
Our armorers cannot even fix them anymore. It gets to the point where our armorers cannot fix them.
I just like to know what it is.
And we have some that are 7 years old, so we do continue to use them, but we are to the point of where if they fail.
A lot of things are run off computers and they get data, you know, especially electronics, but it just sounds like they got you. I'm being, you know, honestly, on their business, they ought to be
I think Mr. Coop wants to rise to be tested for anything over
not
five.
Yes, obviously, Mike Coop, finance. But having been in public safety, and I've asked the same question, so I just wanted to reiterate one thing about the lawsuits. The way it was explained to me is, if there is a lawsuit, Taser will come in and testify in the case. Once it's out of the warranty, that's where we lose their support. And if you go into a lawsuit, and
testify
you will not
for the
have
other
to testify on your side.
I understand, but if that company took them back, rebuilt them, they're just not wanting to rebuild them. If there are pieces in there, they could rebuild them. Unless there's something magical in them. It's just gone.
Well, we have had tasers fail. I mean, there's not...
Well, anything can fail.
I mean, they're not foolproof. I mean, obviously, like I said, it's become a very critical, non-lethal weapon for us, and we've had a much success with it. I can't speak to...
I understand.
I think Taser might be in the business of making money, is what you're saying.
They're making a lot of money because they're not taking them back like any other...
They're not a non-profit.
You know, honestly, as much as you're saying they went to the public, then all of a sudden there'd be more of them, they'd want to do something. But
I'm not that familiar with, but I know I've had... 4 laptops replaced because they couldn't rebuild them, and I figured that's a shell with a few pieces, they could do it.
It's bringing down my district. There's a guy living back in our woods can rebuild any computer.
No, we've heard about them guys.
Maybe you ought to partner with a guy that can build a new cabin.
Really, I seen deliver.
He really
can do a job with Taser.
That's right. You know.
Okay.
Significant accomplishments and programs on 67. 4 part-time civilians were retained to complete the police background. In order to keep the academies moving and get us up to our authorized strength, you have to do these backgrounds, and they are very intensive backgrounds to make sure you can become a police officer. What we used to have to do is take police officers off the street and make them work in HR, sometimes for 6 months, a year, even longer, to try and get backgrounds done so we can have the continuous academies. I have a program that I'm looking at where we have a set academy on a set date every year so we can get away from this hard scramble. Okay, we have a bunch of vacancies. Let's find the money and try to get an academy together. We should actually be having an academy every October on the 1st of October
no matter if you need 10 officers or 30 officers, because what it would do is if you're in the position to overhire, you'll be able to compensate for the attrition rate, and you'll still be able to run your HR unit normally, leaving officers on the road. So these four positions ended up being a benefit to us. Developed a web-based survey that the public is encouraged to complete, and information gleaned from it will assist the delivery of police services. What we've learned from these are very clear. Your average citizen is concerned about quality of life crime. They are less concerned about, you know, a drug shooting over on Route 9 than they are concerned about speeders, about people loitering on the corner, about people throwing trash in front of their homes, drinking in the parkland, dealing drugs in the parkland. That's what the average citizen really cares about. As you well know, sir, the TAPS teams are out there, and that's what they address off of the 911 treadmill. So we promoted six sergeants in December. These were all open vacant sergeant spots that have been vacant for a very long time. What we're already seeing since December is a decrease in calls to our internal affairs division. Frontline supervisors are the guys that keep everybody out there on the up and up and keep their nose clean. It's giving us accountability and responsibility, and it's beginning to pay off as IA has less to do. Maybe give them rebuilding those tasers.
We can make some good money out of that.
I think so. The significant accomplishments, technology improvements, page 68. You're going to see a picture down there of our driving simulator. The picture doesn't do it justice. When we wreck these cars, it's pretty expensive stuff. So this simulator, we're seeing guys that go through this training. Even our driving instructors have come back and said it's made them, it's improved their driving ability. So I have a mandatory program in place that is backed by our director. That it doesn't matter if you have a minor accident or you just kind of dinged your car. You get to go down to the simulator. You get to go down to the sit in the box for a while. And what we're saying is it's improving the driving skills of our officers out there. Accidents based on last year to this year are down.
And I assume this gives you a performance printout or something?
It's really beyond my information. It's really advanced, sir. I saw it at an IACP conference a year ago. They've improved them since then, and this is the improved model. It can do quite a bit. As a matter of fact, if you're the type of person that has a problem with backing, it can run just programs for you learning how to back a vehicle at varying speeds through varying obstacles. It can focus in on a particular problem. So, I mean, it's really a good piece of equipment. We did the same thing with our firearms training simulator. It gives us shoot, no shoot situations. And again, it helps you sharpen your skills without using, you know, 500 or 600 rounds of ammunition down at the range. The hope there is that we'll be able to move the FATS simulator out of the building someday and down to the range. But for right now, while it's at the building, entire platoons are allowed to cycle through the training and use it to improve their shoot, no shoot scenarios. Also, a very advanced simulator.
How long do you
have? Councilman
Powers. How long do you have? Firearms training.
Both of these simulators are new this year, sir. They were both endeavors of the former colonel to have these, and they're both achieved through grant writings. So I just happened to be lucky enough to, you know, use them.
I'm glad to see you have two speed trailers.
Yes, the speed trailers are, you know, when we get all the calls about speeding, we can't afford to just send officers out to all these different spots and have them sit there for hours on end, only to find out there was one speeder. The speed trailers not only slow people down, they also track all of the cars that day, how many vehicles and what speed they were traveling at.
Cool.
We put them out on Old Kennett Pike, and one of the areas that we get quite a considerable amount of complaints. And what we found is that the complaints were validated. There really are an excessive amount of vehicles, and they're traveling at a high rate of speed. Now the speed board says, this is how many speeders you have, this is the time of day, and this is how many cars. Now I know where and when to send the cops and what I should be telling them to watch for.
Are we going to DelDOT to raise the limit?
Well, DelDOT drags their feet on that kind of stuff, sir.
With everything else.
Councilman Cartier.
I think it's good.
Got my attention with the speed trailer thing. Is that paid for by federal grants, or are we paying
for them? They're all federal grants. And that one was a state grant, sir, so probably you'll probably see Office of Highway Safety in there. Not to mention, we're going to have the we're going to have them fitted with ALPRs, so that we'll have automatic license plate readers on there. So not only are you going to track how many cars speed and all that fun stuff, the ALPR will track the actual plates, and it will, so if something occurred in that area and we needed to know if a particular car went down that road, or a car that was used in a homicide or a robbery or a rape went by that ALPR, it'll automatically be identified, that information we captured.
Have we already checked to make sure that we're not going to be violating somebody's right to know where they've been?
We've already dealt with the civil rights folks, and it is not considered to be an infringement.
And I know it was 2 years ago, but I just want to say again, if any council member gets an opportunity, have a little bit of time, and you see one of these, and there's, you know, park off out of the way. I did it for an hour, and I was amazed at how wrong I was, and how many people I actually thought were exceeding the speed limit, and they weren't.
We get a lot of
it.
That
is somewhat deceiving, and I had discussed this with the previous chief, or a couple of chiefs ago, whatever, that, you know, at that time I was getting a lot of calls, not as much now. That, you know, maybe one day we need to look at taking the parking lot of the government center or whatever and inviting the community leaders to come and give them a pad and send some cars through, whatever, and do a little training and have them guess at what the speed. And I think that may open some eyes. I know it did mine. I have to tell you, and I share that all the time, is I was, you know, I was way off the mark on the ones I thought was speed.
Yeah.
Just
to continue that, does the technology exist to have this type of speed trailer so it can identify the license plate? Can it cite the person who exceeds the speed limit?
No, and that program, which is used in other states, is now that is one of the programs that is being attacked as far as if it's legal, you know, getting these instant tickets.
Yeah.
There are some states now rethinking their position on it because there's been some case law poke up that challenges it.
You know, in the city of Wilmington, you know, you go through a red light.
That's a good program.
You get a $100 fine, and I'm just looking at deterring speeding and, you know, with fines. And you're saying this kind of thing. Just for speeding, a red light's a little different thing, I guess, or a signalized intersection.
And it's that's not getting challenged. These speeding ones, where the cameras are automated and they're just snapping pictures of cars on I-95 randomly and then mailing you a $200 ticket.
Right.
That's coming under fire. And
just so we know, we as a county went to Dover last legislative session to try to just get the right to do this in school zones. And we couldn't get the support to put it in place just for the school zone.
Does the speed trailer have a LED part of this system that tells you how fast you're going when you're driving?
Absolutely,
it does.
Yes.
Okay.
What is this?
And I mean that's one of the keys to, you know, slowing people down so they can see there. They can
right.
come around a corner or whatever, like the one we have out on Old Kennett right now. They
maybe
really
you put another thing in there, or get fined. Do the speed limit or get fined. Right?
It's not a bad idea.
Justin Powers.
I just wanted to say, I think we've run them in subdivisions. I think they've had it on Brennan Estates Boulevard. And I think it's just a lot of people running through there don't really notice how fast they're going. And I think that's really what I've always asked. We had one earlier, and it was always down and broken. And
no, these are brand new.
And the thing is, I think it's good to put it in there and start showing the people. And they start slowing down.
Yes.
Themselves.
Yeah, it's a behavior modifier.
Yeah.
It's a good thing to have. Well, we've gotten to the point now with certain roads where we have zero tolerance. We don't even give you, you know, normally you get a ticket for 7 miles over when you're really going 20 over. We don't give you that full ticket. We've actually gone to a zero tolerance policy on certain roads, Old Kennett being one of them. We're writing tickets for $200 and $300 a piece. So maybe we'll save the state's budget.
We just need to increase our percentage.
Good idea. We've had a lot of discussions about the in-car cameras. I think they're a very good thing, and I know we will move towards wearable cameras someday. But for now, the in-car cameras, you know, they they have proven useful in other jurisdictions. I believe they'll prove useful here. A lot of times you find it when a defendant finds out there was a camera involved, they plead guilty pretty quick. Stories don't match the camera. Page 69, technology goals. We've talked about the cameras. We want to utilize the grant funding to build a county-wide camera infrastructure. Some of that money is we're looking at is the D-Block grant and other areas. If we can run cameras along the Riverway or along 9, we think we would have a lot of useful intelligence.
I have a couple of communities, and you're familiar with at least one of them, that have put their own camera system in, and that's because, quite honestly, the overwhelming majority of the homes are rentals, and the majority of the owners are responsible when they've come together. I'm just thinking, I mean, I know we look for grants and everything else, whether we look to see if there was any program out there where we could come up with, maybe there's some grants where we could come up with some type of a match program to entice some of the communities to go on with us, because I know we have access to the fee from those cameras.
Yeah, as long as they give you, as long as they give you the code to put in, yeah, we access those cameras. Arbor Management gives us control of all of their cameras and all of the developments that they own in Newcastle County.
I mean, I know Lori Kane doesn't have anything to do, or Ms. Feaser, so, you know, maybe we could just, I'm just saying, maybe add that to what we're learning, whether there's something out there that would, where we could partner with those communities if they'll pay 50%, put it up, and give us the access.
Or we'll certainly take a look at it, sir. It's not a bad idea, in my opinion. And cameras are a good thing. Obviously, we are moving towards the cars having more technology in them in the form of this product called Rockets, which turns the car into a Wi-Fi hotspot.
So if I see the kids running down the street
behind us, yes, they're using the hotspot, right? It will improve our ability, you know, in car for the GPS mapping, reporting other wireless capabilities, and is also downloading all the video that the car shoots during its shift to a server at police headquarters. The pilot program on computer tablets for patrol vehicles. The first of the tablets will actually go out to mount it so they can write e-tickets. We're still the only unit left in the police department that writes paper tickets. And again, if you go to the tax meeting, you find out that they write a lot of tickets. They write quite a few tickets. People kind of get shocked when they're getting a ticket from a mounted cop, but they give out hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of violations.
I got a phone call from a family member saying, can you believe I got a ticket from a van? Yeah, what do I do? Pay it.
You still have to pay it.
What you do? Trigger, don't give them a discount.
So the tablets will get rid of the paper map books once and for all, and that will save us some money down the road.
Let's go put that on the horse.
I'm sorry.
Contract with Dell just to map the location of probationers within our jurisdiction. We already have that ability to do that. We want to improve upon it. Some of the software that we're buying now to improve our maps for our analytical policing program are forthcoming, and we're going to see quite a few better maps and better predicting quality. The software that I was just speaking about is also going to provide a dashboard. In short, that is a window on the computer in the car that the officer doesn't have to go through varying programs to get in to see what in their area they should be policing. It'll literally put up a map 500 foot by 500 foot or 1,000 foot by 1,000 foot. It'll predict what type of crime is going to occur the day of the week and the time of the day to the best it can based on those algorithms, and all the officer has to do is be inside that box. Wow. And they won't have to go into separate programs to see that. It'll just be on the map. And then on the other side, they'll be able to let us know what they did. So now when we put that map up in the weekly meeting on Tuesday, it'll say, you know, Officer Cartier was here from 10 to 12. The following crimes did not occur, obviously because of my presence and or the actions I took, which would be arrest or so forth and so on. So when that technology has been ordered, it's been approved, and it's on its way. So we'll see that very shortly. Jeff spoke brilliantly about the CAD, so I'll leave it alone. We continue to assess the deployment of sworn personnel. We've already changed it significantly since inception of the TAPS program. There are now two mobile enforcement teams. A third team will be assembled. Again, we're taking resources out of the patrol division, which at first kind of draws a big question mark. But the truth is, the reason we're seeing the reduction in crime, the reduction in calls for services, these teams are attacking quality of life areas. We have the third team going into the criminal investigations unit. It'll be the first time in my time with the police department that the criminal investigations unit has had a deployable resource that'll be proactive. Whereas patrol was reactive, imagine CIs is almost double reactive. They are the last to get called because it's usually something patrol can't solve, and it's usually hard to solve. So now, if they're having a spike in robberies, if they're having a spike, and they will this summer, and they're having a spike in burglaries, they can actually deploy this resource to that area. And again, disconnected from the 911 complaints. They're not responding to complaints. They go to an area, they work on a problem, they stay in that area until that problem is resolved. The third and final team we will not be able to put out until after the academy graduates, which won't be until August of this year. Once you have the third team, you'll have geographical responsibility across all of Newcastle County, a north team, a west side team, and a central team. And again, we believe that it'll continue to reduce the overall calls for service. It'll reduce the calls for quality of life services. Talked about FATS. The West Point Command Leadership Program. And just a great program for officers that are looking to advance their careers or want to better themselves in the area of leadership. I am not a graduate of that particular program, but the graduates speak so highly of it, and it's a well-respected command school. We run it right out of our own house, and we get a lot of in-departmental requests to attend the school and from outside agencies. We constantly try to expand our recruiting efforts as we struggle with trying to hit our authorized strength of 370. We just applied for another grant, federal grant, to try and increase our authorized strength to 375. But as everyone knows, the grants are getting harder and harder to get. But, we recruit all the time. As a matter of fact, I'm due to attend a job fair tomorrow with the director, a noble event down at Delaware State University. So we continue to work on that. Talked about our challenges in staffing. We reach out constantly to the guys and girls that are coming out of the military for the most obvious reason. They bring a skill set with them. We have now reduced the acceptable rank of E5 to E4 so that we can get guys that do have the specialized training and did not have an opportunity to get the 60 college credits. We're taking them in based on the fact that they were a non-commissioned officer in any of the four branches of the service. And we talked about all the fun we're having with our grants being reduced. But we have a great grant writer, and I just want to take a moment to say over the years she has gotten us a lot of equipment, a lot of training. And, with Captain Fieser being newly promoted and overseeing that area of the police department, we can be sure we're still going to see more grant money. Right, Wendy? So, got some pretty smart people over in that area. If you go back to the actual charts, when you see these calls for service chart and theft chart, burglary chart, almost every one of these, with the exception of a few, you're going to see that our clearance rate is higher than the national average, so we are solving crime, and our actual calls continue to go down. We have a massive problem with heroin in Newcastle County, and the heroin drives the property crime. But we have, for the first time in my 24 years at the police department, we've invested in the burglary division. We've increased it for the first time in size. And now with this team going into CIs, I think we're going to put a heavier hit on the heroin and a heavier hit on the guys doing the property crime. Once the team goes into CIs and is able to do what our drug unit does, which is our undercover surveillance for burglaries, undercover surveillance for robberies, They won't have to do that anymore. This team will take care of that. So the actual drug unit, the undercover drug unit, will be able to do strictly drug work unless there's a extreme situation, which I think is going to get a greater advantage on the raging heroin problem that we suffer in Newcastle County and the state of Delaware, and which drives our property crime. So feel free to look through those charts. I'll address any questions you may have.
I'd like to talk a little bit about the issue of officers involved in collisions out on the road and how you see that going in the next, you know, year or so.
I mean, as of right now, based on this time period this year to compared to the time period last year, we are having a reduction in accidents. We've got a hyper focus on, we're looking at every accident, the cause of that accident, and how much retraining has to be done. You know, the old way of doing it is to throw it into the discipline matrix and discipline the guy. There has to be an educational piece. You know, in some cases, we have to teach people how to drive. You know, you think that you go through the academy, you learn how to drive in the academy for mostly pursuits and how to handle a high-powered police vehicle and how to multitask when you do it, because the truth is we have to be able to pick up our radios, we have to be able to run equipment in the car while we're driving. And that's it. You leave the academy and we're done training you. And that's the truth. And yet we'll make you shoot 2 times a year, and we'll make you, you know, requalify on hand-to-hand combat. We'll make you requalify on everything but driving. So we're moving back into the educational piece of it. So the long answer to a short question, I think you're going to see it get better, sir. I think you're going to see the accidents reduced. I think the accidents that are avoidable with the driving simulator and the fact that supervisors are being told that we have to focus on educating the officers on how to drive the car. And you get into an accident right now, part of the discipline process, if you will, is remedial training. And I think that's going to help, sir. And then once we get the money together to make the keyboard on the computers inert, as soon as you hit 7 miles per hour, the keyboard will be inert. Once you do that, and these guys stop talking and driving, when I mean talking like this, we'll stop hitting people. We'll stop hitting things. We'll stop hitting poles and other fun stuff. Because they're typing. We
distracted,
and they're distracted, and a lot of times they're doing their job, and I respect that. I hold my officers in the highest regard, but we put this huge temptation in front of them to look over at that screen and type on that keyboard because it's quick, it's easy. Captain Feaser is looking into software that will let us speak to the computer because one of the things they like to do is they like to get behind a car and run that tag. They find the car suspicious, they're running the tag. So we want you to just be able to look over at the screen and say, computer, run Delaware 12345. And if we can get some grant money together and buy that type of software, sir, and we continue with the training and putting people down in the driving simulator, we're going to do better.
Maybe we will have, in our career here, see automated driving vehicles. I mean, that technology is not that far away.
It's not far away. We can talk to the computer. The thing that inhibits us right now from talking to the computer is the police radio. It confuses the software. But Captain Feaser has identified a vendor that swears they can do it. Now, we're not biting. We're making them come out here and show us.
Right.
So they said they'll come show us. They'll give us an operational unit that will prove that you can talk to this computer. You don't have to type on the keyboard.
One last area, police vehicles. Have we decided what the new police vehicle is going to be yet, or where are we in that process?
Well, I had to go out to bid for legal reasons, but obviously the vehicle that we really need, want, and would best serve the purpose now that the Crown Victoria is extinct is the Tahoe. You know, the Ford, the car that Ford is producing right now is a fine vehicle in regards to its speed, its power, and all that fun stuff, the all-wheel drive Taurus. I can't put an officer your size in that car. I mean, you have to fold them in half like luggage. We can't get our equipment in the trunk. It's just, and not to mention the all-wheel drive system is wreaks havoc on the transmission, and historically with a brand new model coming out, be it Ford or Chevy or anything else, we end up having a lot of recalls and problems. But when you look over at the medic shop and you look at the Tahoes and Suburbans that they have with hundreds of thousands of miles on them, and you know, just very, very good cars that are that have held up the test of time, so we want the Tahoes. But I got to go out to bid, and if depending on what comes back.
So we are going to go to an SUV kind of platform for a patrol vehicle.
That's the hope. It'll be pursuit rated, though.
Councilman Weiner and Councilman Dell.
Thank you.
And Councilman Dell.
What I've noticed is the folks still contact the council persons and say, we heard there was a crime in the community. And, of course, our first response is, did you call 911? Did you call 573-2800? All of us need to be ambassadors to let community folks know that they're our partners, and the public-private partnership only works if they're giving us clues, suspicious items. The other thing that we need to continue to hammer home is that there aren't enough tax dollars in the world to do everything there is to do. We need to look for public-private partnerships, whether it's citizens reporting graffiti or other tips needs to work. I'm real pleased in speaking to Deputy CAO, it's been a long afternoon, that we're going to have CityWorks app up and running very shortly, so that a GIS-based system, someone can take a photo, they don't need to know the mile marker of something that looks suspicious, and it goes right into our database as to what it was, and that it'll help our 911 system identify where the crime is.
Okay. I got that. We have to continue to harness technology. It's money for you.
Councilman Bell.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I'm not going to belabor too much on the topics, but there's various research out there. As we know, Los Angeles has tested out the smart police car and the in-car computerized of being able to activate emergency equipment and things of that nature. So there are some pilot programs out there. And all one has to do is take a look at the Caprice. And we had an opportunity over at the bridge to take a look at one that DSP has. And I don't know how a good-sized officer fits in there safely with all the equipment they have in that front seat. So, you know, the Tahoe is definitely a more practical vehicle.
Not to mention the Tahoe pitted against the Crown Victoria that we drive right now and the Evoque course in Dover, the Tahoe uses less gas. And it's shocking how powerful those Crown Vicks are, but they really drink gasoline, and the Tahoe actually saves gasoline. I know that sounds odd for a size SUV that size, but it does.
Councilman Powers,
when you're bidding Tahoes against what?
That's, well,
I mean. You know,
we wrote the bid in a very particular manner, hoping the only thing that comes back is the Tahoe. But you have to remember that Ford doesn't want to get out of the police market. So
we accuse purchasing and doing that. They say they don't do it. Now you.
I wrote it. I'm guilty, sir. I wrote that.
Off and stuck it to the paperwork and sent it out.
I told them what we need. Well, what I did is I told them what we absolutely need.
Dimensions.
I told them what we absolutely have to have in order to carry the equipment. You know, if you're going to get that Ford, what is that? So if you get the Ford Explorer, you're going to hit about 4,800 RPMs to pull out in front of the truck that's gone 65 miles an hour. You're going to be standing on the gas with both feet to get out in front of traffic in this car. We've driven them. I've driven them. It's not the car to go with. You get into a Chevy Tahoe, you won't even hit 2,000 RPMs to pull out in front of the truck.
What are the motors in either one of them?
One's got a 5.3 liter V8, that's the Tahoe, and the other vehicle, the Ford vehicle, has a six cylinder, and I don't know the 3.2 liter V6.
Yeah. You're not comparing apples to apples.
And we're gonna run that car into the ground, and then the all wheel drive cars, those transaxles just get eaten up.
But when you said it, the car is separate than the Tahoe, so the only thing you're really
want the Tahoe.
Yeah, but I mean,
they're a little different out there, large enough to accommodate just the equipment that we have in these vehicles, and then the size of some of our guys, it just doesn't work.
Well,
it makes more sense to go to SUV because it can do all that we want, plus, as you said, it's a gas
It's the only thing the cartel carries.
You should see some of the guys we arrest. We're just trying to stick them in the back of it. Trying to get them in the back of a Crown Vic. Sometimes they have to call a supervisor and bring a special car over there to get them. You can't force them in there. And then when you do get them in the back seat, you can't slip a ping pong ball in there with them.
I'm just meaning a V8. I mean, a Ford doesn't have a V8.
No, not one with we want. No, sir.
It doesn't. I don't think anybody does.
Okay. Have I missed anyone? Is there any other questions? Yes.
You got a big band.
In the time being, any officers over such a certain size will be unmounted. Brains, leaders, no. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Thank you all.
Next.
Chairman, last but not least, we're going to bring Jeff Miller back up to talk about grants to fire services.
Thank you, Jeff.
Council, again, Jeff Miller, Emergency Communications. You probably move quickly to this one. Page 94, eight-year grant history, showing a fiscal 2014 recommendation with a 9.8% increase with a totaling of 4.59 million. 4.85 million. Page 95 breaks that down a little bit. Communications and utilities for the fire service of $13,500. Fixed charges of $3.6 million with the increase to $4. And then internal GIS charges of $26,599. That's for the air cards that are in all the DLS ambulances to provide mobile CAD to those units. The breakdown on page 96, there's no change from fiscal 13. We'll see the details of 84-87, but it reflects a 5% across-the-board increase to the volunteer fire company, funding of $225,000 to the city of Wilmington Fire Company, and it removes the Emergency Services Corps, but it adds a volunteer fire company discretionary fund, which is highlighted on 85.
Would you like to go first, Councilman Bell?
Sir?
If I could.
Yes, I will. Okay. I will yield to the younger.
Thank you, sir. I guess the first question I'm going to have, and I went over this tooth, fine tooth and comb, is from our finance department, is that my understanding in past years is that the city residents do not pay a local service tax for fire service to Newcastle County government. And if they do, it's given back to them at a credit.
Ed Miller's in the finance office. They do not pay anything in their tax rate for fire.
Okay. That being said, I want to really strongly go on record that I have serious concern and I have serious problem over the fact that we would take Newcastle County taxpayer money and we would allot a $225,000 grant and aid to our city fire department, which the citizens of Wilmington do not pay for. We have had countless presentations by our volunteer fire service that has brought forward to us the fact that they are having, beginning to have, and continuing to have financial problems in maintaining what today is a volunteer and part paid, so a combination fire service throughout Newcastle County. When you look at our county fire service, fire, rescue, emergency medical service, 21 individual fire departments, 31 stations, they receive an annual grant from Newcastle County in the amount of $3,586, which if you divide it by the 31 stations, it equals out to about $115,692. I had a conversation just the other evening at the County Firefighters Association meeting down at Goodwill, Fire Company of Newcastle, and the president of Hokeson said that they are expending to date over $500,000 alone in personnel costs for their part paid personnel in order to keep a service going. The city of Wilmington, their budget is $124 million for six fire stations. One of those six is the fireboat. And I want it to be on the record, because when folks listen to the tape, there's not a mean-spirited bone in my body against any firefighter in this nation, and especially in our state and our city. But I'll be damned if I'm going to sit here, and excuse my language, and take a look at $225,000 being appropriated for grant and aid for six stations, when we have, just in the greater Newark area alone, Newark Fire Department and Christiana have a total of seven stations. They run equal to or more working fire alarms than the city does throughout the year. And their grant and aid totals for seven stations approximately $500,000. And here we are going to give $225,000 to the city. I don't think that it's right. I think that if we're going to invest that $225,000, it should be invested, the county taxpayers' money, it should be invested where it belongs. If we took $4 million a station, just based on the $24 million for the city, times 31 stations, the fire services told us time and time again that if we went to a fully paid service, it would be over $100 million. Well, folks, 4 million times 31 is $124 million. I think that our volunteer fire rescue and EMS service will put them up against anybody in this country. They provide an outstanding service, but they have full-time and part-time paid personnel. They are managing it on their own. They are paying the benefits on their own. They are paying for the uniforms, the turnout gear, the self-contained breathing apparatus, as well as the apparatus and the station costs, and trying to maintain a fire rescue and EMS service for this county to prevent what would be a catastrophic tax increase in this county if we had to go to a paid fire department. It's not a matter of professional and paid. Our volunteers are as equally as professional. They're as equally trained at our renowned Delaware State Fire School. And so my compliments to the firefighters and personnel in the city. They have a contracted EMS service. They do pay for the paramedics for the city of Wilmington. But I just cannot sit here and not speak out adamantly and question why this administration would want to turn around and provide a $225,000 grant to the city of Wilmington. The fire service itself, when the administration was asked by the Fire and EMS Advisory Board, they got no answer on whether there was any grant for the city. But there is. It shows in this book. And I don't think that the Fire and EMS Advisory Board, which is an appointed board of this government, representing all 21 companies, was consulted. I, as public safety chair of this council, have not been consulted. And they can do what they want, but I think this is a slap in the face to our professional volunteers throughout Newcastle County to tell them that we can only give you a 5% increase this year, keeping in mind that they took a 2.5% decrease some 3 to 4 years ago. So when you say 5% now, 5% doesn't compound on what they'd have got back then and each year. So I look at this, I'm terribly concerned about this. The chairman of the Fire and EMS Advisory Board, I had a conversation with him as late as this afternoon. He was hoping to attend this meeting, but got called into work. But I know it's not fire service against fire service. What it is doing right by the taxpayers of Newcastle County and spending their tax dollars on their services. And well, I will leave it at that.
I'm going to call on myself now.
All right, sir.
Good job.
If the county executive wants to pull $225,000 out of his contingency, if at the end of this budget he has that much of a contingency for FY14, he can do it. It's nothing I can do about that. 2004, when this council expanded and we came in and did that budget that year, I believe it was $750,000 to to the city for a hook and ladder, the grant. And I guess my better judgment, I supported that because I felt it had been promised by a prior administration. I felt it had been promised, there were commitments, and the fire company was counting on that. So I supported it. Day or two after that, I walked out in front of this building. There was a fire truck sitting there with two firemen. And I say this because I pride myself on keeping my word. So I jokingly said to the fire personnel that were there, well, we gave you $750,000 for a hook and ladder. Don't forget to come to the eighth floor and get us. And the response was, only he didn't use the abbreviation, when you give me an effing raise, I'll come to the eighth floor and get you. My response back was, and it'll be a cold day in hell when I agree to give you another grant. So that's my position on this 225. Councilman Wise.
Thanks.
Because I do want to keep my word to that gentleman.
Yep. I have to concur with the remarks, or the spirit of the remarks, of both of the councilmen that have spoken. I'm still upset that council, by a vote of 6-1 in 2002, voted to give $15 million of our county tax dollars to the good people that do public safety in the city of Wilmington. I was the only council member that had the courage to say no, because it wasn't the right thing to do. And I concur with the remarks made by the chairman. There's nothing we can do about contingency, but I concur with both the remarks made.
Councilman Powers and Councilman Cartier.
I have to agree with all three, and I, you know, it always comes back to saying I have constituents that work in Wilmington, and technically they're paying a tax to support it, and I don't think we need a double tax for something that's not ours. I can't support that at all. It's just not right. I got a Middletown fire company running with a $300,000 deficit from their ambulance service. There's just, the calls keep going up. If you look at the numbers, what you had for his head on there, look how many are coming out of Middletown and down in that area. So, and they bill it, and they're lucky to get half of it. You know, we all say we're not getting anything. They ain't getting nothing either. They're getting less. They can't even operate on it. I had Christiana until this past year. They're losing a heck of a lot of money. How can we put it into it's just not right. The people that are working here pay a wage tax, including us. For what? What am I getting out of it? I guess I thought I had a fire company.
You get these kind of great days with us. Councilman Cartier.
I'm not going to be redundant. I agree with everything that's been said, and I want to compliment Councilman Bell. Of course, he's our expert on public safety here and finding this issue in this budget proposal. I have two volunteer companies, the unpaid professionals that we were talking about, Brandywine and Claymont, facing serious financial struggles. To the ambulance issue, I can tell you with Claymont, which I'm very familiar with, about 40% of their ambulance costs are not being reimbursed. And, you know, any way we can support the volunteer companies, we need to find a way to do it, because the point is well made that, you know, if we have to undertake this important public safety mission, the costs are extremely large. People's property taxes are literally going to go up by 100% to do this. So they give us a huge value. We need to support them any way we can. And in this budget, I'm glad to see, you know, there's an increase there. And maybe we should throw this into the pot, the grant, to the give it to the volunteer services. And, you know, and no offense to the city of Wilmington, and, you know, I think, but they have a taxing authority that supports their fire company, and our volunteer companies rely on their donations and what we can give them, whatever federal grants they can raise. So we need to support them, especially in this time, and focus on our core mission as far as fire safety and working with our volunteer companies.
Josh McGowan.
Just a closing remark and kind of capitalize on what Councilman Carty had just said, that we have $225,000 available to give to the city, then divide it amongst the 21 volunteer fire companies and give them the increase they need to start helping them get where they need to go. But the other thing is, don't make a charade out of this. If the city needs more money for the city fire department and we collect the taxes, the property taxes, have the city, the mayor and the council of the city, pass an increase in local service tax, we'll collect it and give it back to them. Let them increase their taxes, not put the burden of this cost on the taxpayers in New Castle County.
Next. Well, thank you. Just finishing off with the final.
And just not an apology, but Chief Miller from the communications was given the responsibility to present this because it is prepared by, you know, the folks in the emergency communications area because they deal with the volunteers. But any of the comments that have been made is not specifically about one of our division chiefs.
So we'll vote on that.
But it does highlight that it's reflective to the fire service fee, or if you look at the reimbursement on page 98, so you'll see, and just for instance, Aetna's at $222,347, reason being is the number of fire stations they have. But in the same light, the ambulance, you look at 55,595, they don't have just one ambulance, they have multiple ambulances, five or six of them. If you have a rescue, you get a rescue appropriation, and then if you have a rescue boat, you get a rescue boat appropriation. But that would still total out to the 4.05. And that's all I have.
Any further questions, comments, critiques?
Thank you.
I guess Director Bryant, I hope we addressed all of your questions, all your concerns this afternoon. I've been back here for just about 4 or 5 months, and I must tell you, what you saw today is an indication of what I see every single day from the leadership in our public safety department. They are by far the best of the best. And believe me, I've seen them all throughout this state, throughout this region, and throughout this country. These guys do an excellent job in leading their individual respective divisions, and it makes me proud to work with them. I think it's a really great feeling, and I hope you, sitting around this table and beyond, see that in these individuals. They work hard for me. They work hard for the county and the citizens that we serve. They give it their all in all, and I say to you publicly, thank you for all that you do for me and for New Castle County and the residents of this county, as well as obviously the council that you sit in front of. So again, thank you for giving us this opportunity to present. And if you have any questions beyond today, feel free to contact me and I will reach out to whoever and get the answer for you.
Any further questions from any members of council?
Great job.
Any from the public? Any comments? Can I get a motion?
Motion adjourned.
Is there a second? All in favor?
Aye.
Not voting.